Good evening and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report. I'm Lee Robartis. On today's show, we have an interview indicating the numbers of businesses and residences to be displaced by the proposed central and eastern alignments of US 95 south of Moscow may have been misstated in the Idaho Transportation Department's draft environmental impact statement. We'll have an interview about that, but first, this news. The Department of Energy disclosed today hundreds of gallons of high-level nuclear waste has leaked over the years from one of the underground storage tanks near the Columbia River at Hanford. Washington Governor Jay Inslee said at a news conference convened after news of the leak came out, quote, "We were told this problem was dealt with years ago." Washington State has a zero-tolerance policy on nuclear waste leaks. Inslee also said the state of Washington would take legal action if necessary to force the government to clean up the waste. The tank in question holds 447,000 gallons of transuranic waste, and it has been leaking between 200 and 300 gallons per year. It's unclear how long the leak has been going on. Governor Inslee said there is no immediate risk to public health. It might take years or decades for the leaked radioactive material to reach groundwater and then more time to reach the Columbia River. The Department of Energy has a pumping station near the river, which is reportedly capable of removing most, but not all, contaminants from groundwater before it enters the river. Inslee says he's concerned because across-the-board federal budget cuts might be ordered if Congress doesn't reach a budget deal by next month, and Hanford cleanup workers might be furloughed then. The Spokesman Review website quoted Governor Inslee saying, "We are not going to be trapped into a dead end of arguing about priorities. I'm not coming here to say we're going to start a lawsuit today. We are not unaware of our legal rights, and we know where the federal courts are." Ada County commissioners say they plan on terminating their contract with Diamondis Energy to build a waste-to-energy plant in the county. Plans for the energy conversion plant were controversial after the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality issued a report last year saying the 22-megawatt plant had the potential for mercury emissions higher than government limits. The IDEQ report also said there was concerns about dioxin and furan emissions. Department of Environmental Quality Air Quality Division Manager Mike Simon wrote at the time the issues needed to be addressed before the agency could issue a draft construction permit to Dynamis. Also last year, Bannock County Prosecutor Mark Heidelman issued a 6,000-page report on concerns about conflict of interest by Ada County commissioners. Heidelman said in December there are some troubling references in the report, but nothing rises to the level of criminal conduct. Ada County commissioners will hold a public hearing Tuesday before they officially vote to terminate their contract with Dynamis. The Forest Service issued a report this morning concluding no human error contributed to the death of 20-year-old firefighter Ann Viseth of Moscow, who was killed by a falling snag while fighting the steep corner fire near headquarters August 12th. According to the Lewiston Tribune website, the Forest Service Special Investigative Team report said Veseth's death, quote, "resulted from the chance alignment of certain conditions, an emergency response to control a wildland fire, which required the presence of firefighters in an area where fire-weakened trees could fall on their own with little or no warning." The report also said the judgment and decisions of the firefighters involved in the steep corner fire were appropriate. The report differs from conclusions reached by the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which earlier levied a $14,000 fine against the Forest Service and the Clearwater Potlatch Timber Protection Agency for safety violations during the Steep Creek Fire. The citations were for failing to keep fire crews informed about weather reports and the fire status. An OSHA report also cites poor communication, failure by managers to control their workforce, and unsafe fire line practices. The day before Veseth was killed, a Forest Service hotshot crew from Montana pulled out of the fire due to fire conditions. A hotshot commander said in a report the conditions were, quote, extremely unsafe because of falling snags, lack of communication, lack of command structure, and mixed crews with no leadership. In response to the case of an 18-year-old University of Idaho student who wandered off and died of exposure, the university has announced a sweeping effort to evaluate its substance abuse policies as well as its relationships with fraternities and sororities. Toxicology tests on Joseph Weirderick of Stanley found the architecture student was likely highly intoxicated on alcohol the night he wandered off and also had marijuana in his system. Dean of Students Bruce Pittman announced yesterday the university is forming two task forces, one of which will look at alcohol and substance abuse policies. The other task force will look at the university's relationships with its Greek houses. Weirderick left a Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity party at about midnight Saturday, January 19th, and his body was found under a Mountain View Road bridge over Paradise Creek, north of town, on Monday, January 21st. Weirderick's blood alcohol level was 0.17 at the time of his death, and Moscow Police Chief David Duke says Weirderick's blood alcohol content likely was between 0.25 and 0.3 when he left the party. Latah County Coroner Kathy Maybutt told the Daily News nothing but alcohol and marijuana was found in Weirderick's blood. Maybutt said, "I've heard of several other students who have been disoriented, so it certainly made me think it was something else. That's all that really showed up. All of the drugs would keep absorbing, and some don't last as long. We tested for a lot of stuff, and it came back negative." University of Idaho General Counsel Kent Nelson said it's unlikely the university can force Greek houses to go dry because they are independently owned and operated. Nelson said up until now the university has maintained a relationship that respects the legal separation, and it's up to the national fraternity or sorority organizations to order a group to be dry. The Greek task force will work to determine if the university wants to keep that kind of relationship. The Idaho Senate today approved a bill that extends a pilot program that gives early high school graduates $1,400 college scholarships. Last year, the state disbursed $40,000 in the early graduate scholarships program. Republican Senator Steve Thane of Emmett says the state saved $150,000 last year by not paying for the senior year of education for those who graduated early. The bill now heads to the House. The Idaho House voted 59-8 today to spend $3 million on a project to help attract businesses to Idaho cities. Legislation creating the Idaho Opportunity Fund now goes to the Senate. According to the Associated Press, the money would fund infrastructure improvements for roads and sewers that would attract out-of-state companies and businesses to the state. Lawmakers say these types of improvements are things companies look for before moving to Idaho and investing. Under the proposal, local governments would also be required to match any state grants in the proposal. Republican Jeff Thompson of Idaho Falls said the legislation includes oversight restrictions, which would hold any new business accountable. If a company promises an economic windfall, they must prove their benefits before getting the state dollars. Representative Pete Nielsen of Mountain Home said he thinks the state would be better served by concentrating on mandatory services rather than creating new grant legislation. A former cul-de-sac school district teacher has been charged with 11 counts of alleged child pornography possession. Lewiston police detectives say they discovered 54 suspicious files at the residence of former agricultural education instructor Tyler D. Mink. Police officers said they searched Mink's home after obtaining a search warrant from Magistrate Kent J. Merrick and discovered hundreds of files allegedly containing child pornography. Officers contacted a school board member, and based on conversations with that member, police do not believe the images involved local children. During an interview with an investigating officer, Mink is alleged to have admitted to downloading child pornography. Mink is now in the Nez Perce County Jail and is scheduled to appear in court for a preliminary hearing Wednesday, February 27th. At the murder trial of 21-year-old Daniel Lescano in Colfax Wednesday, forensic pathologist Jeffrey Reynolds testified Marcus Scherer lived for at least 8 to 10 minutes before he died from two gunshot wounds. Reynolds said Scherer's blood flow patterns showed Scherer was alive when he was tied up and thrown into the trunk of a car. Scherer's body was dumped into a stream at a location known as the Hole in the Ground near Bonnie Lake in northern Whitman County. Reynolds noted Scherer's body was relatively well preserved because of the coldness of the water during the 2.5 months before it was found by a fisherman. Lescano is on trial for first-degree murder, first-degree kidnapping, and unlawful disposal of human remains for his part in the killing of 23-year-old Marcus Scherer. Lescano's 24-year-old brother Frank also faces the same charges and awaits his trial scheduled for Monday, February 25th. The evidence Scherer was alive before being thrown into the trunk of the borrowed vehicle impacts the kidnapping charges against the brothers. The car was owned by Washtenaw area resident Eli Lindsay. Lindsay testified the car was loaned to the Lescano brothers with his permission. The burned-out car was found near Nine Mile Falls, northwest of Spokane, and an AK-47 was found in the Spokane River shortly after Scherer disappeared. Evidence presented at the trial showed the gun is registered to Frank Lescano. Reynolds testified Scherer was conscious for 4 to 6 minutes and could have been alive for as many as 20 to 30 minutes. Reynolds' testimony added that the first bullet shattered Scherer's pelvis bone but did not hit any internal organs. The second bullet broke Scherer's collarbone and a few ribs, punctured his lung, and ripped open a vital artery, filling his chest cavity with blood. Other witnesses testified about their parts covering up the crime during yesterday's trial proceedings. Stephanie Van Dyke of Spokane, considered Daniel Lescano's best friend, and her roommate Kyle Evans testified Lescano came to their apartment in an agitated state. Evans testified Lescano came to him asking if he wanted to help him beat Scherer up. Van Dyke cried during her testimony, telling the jury of Lescano's angry state. She said he appeared very angry and looked as though he had urinated in his pants. Van Dyke said he got very angry with me and yelled at me and said we were never supposed to speak of that night again and that I never saw him. Van Dyke also said Lescano told her his car disappeared because of a Molotov cocktail. He added Lescano bragged to her about being a murderer, but did not say Scherer's name specifically. Van Dyke also testified Daniel Lescano told her not to worry that Scherer's body had been found, telling her that he had hiked a long way. Prosecution attorneys said they plan to rest their case today. Defense lawyers plan to cross-examine witnesses starting today and finish their case by Tuesday. We now turn to our featured segment. A concerned local resident has found that a number of businesses that would be displaced by the proposed central and eastern alignments of U.S. Highway 95 south of Moscow are apparently incorrect in the draft environmental impact statement. The Idaho Transportation Department is taking written public comments on the draft EIS until Saturday, February 23rd. The agency wants to widen the highway to 4 lanes for the 6 miles south of Moscow, and the designated preferred alternative route in the draft environmental impact statement goes up on the shoulder of Paradise Ridge. The proposed central route mostly follows the current route of US 95, and there is also a longer western route in the draft EIS that approaches the Washington state line before curving back towards the southern entrance to Moscow. The eastern route is controversial because of its potential impact on native Palouse prairie habitat and the extremely rare giant Palouse earthworm species that's been found there. Critics also say the eastern route would be less safe because of an increased likelihood of large ungulates and other wildlife crossing the road on the ridge, and because of the apparent higher number of days with ice fog and snow along that route. In a chart comparing the three proposed alignments on page 13 of the draft EIS, it states 8 businesses would be displaced by the central alignment and 0 would be displaced along the eastern and western alignments. The same chart says 7 residences would be displaced by the central route and 5 would be displaced by the eastern route. Former Paradise Ridge resident Lottie Forbes says she spoke with Idaho Transportation Department District Right-of-Way Supervisor Tim Long and other ITD officials for more than an hour at the public hearing on the draft EIS in January and found the numbers in the draft EIS are wrong. Radio Free Moscow contacted District Right-of-Way Supervisor Tim Long today, and Long indicated he would do an interview on the subject, but would need the interview to be approved by ITD Public Relations Officer Jeff Stratton in Boise before it could take place. We spoke to Lottie Forbes this afternoon.
Yeah, so they said that there'd be 8 displacements for businesses, and so I went to the ITD hearing on January 23rd, and I was actually concerned and wondering, okay, which businesses are going to be bulldozed and displaced, like literally have to move. And so I went and talked with him and also with Carmen Reese, who's the senior right-of-way agent, because he wanted to, you know, confirm with her that that information was inaccurate. And between the two of them, they said to be displaced, you have to have the right-of-way line actually physically go through the building. And if you look at the maps, you'll see that the right-of-way line does not do that. And so the right-of-way will encroach on the businesses. But my understanding is that many of those businesses, when they built themselves, they knew the highway could be widened there. And so they built knowing that they had to be set back. And he mentioned that JJ's building supply, for example, they did an addition on their store, and they checked first to see, you know, where they should build so they wouldn't be within that right-of-way. And so some of those right-of-ways are purchased and some aren't, but regardless, all those businesses are back from it. So the way they could be affected is greater noise, and some may have, say, like a parking lot that is a little more infringed on. I know Mundy's, they said it would be a little harder for their trucks to back in when they do deliveries for fabrication materials, and but that it wouldn't make it so they would lose business or anything. You know, it wouldn't be a problem to have the highway there. So yeah, no businesses will be displaced. And so on the, I found this really misleading because right on their bulletin board there at the hearing and then also in the environmental impact statement, the draft one, it says that 8 businesses will be displaced. And it's just not true, basically. So,
okay.
And he wanted me to specifically write in my comment letter that there will be no definitive displacement of businesses on C3 and that this is misleading to the public. So that's what Tim Long was so helpful, and he said that he's spoken with his supervisor regarding this and that there needs to be some communication between who's writing the draft environmental impact statement and the right-of-way people.
Okay, and I am looking at page 13 of the draft environmental impact statement, the very opening section, and that's where the chart is that says there will be business replacements along the C3 route, the western and eastern proposed routes, 0 business, and also the chart for residential displacements reports 3 for the western route, 7 for the central route, and 5 for the eastern route. And from your conversations with Tim Long and Carmen Reese of the ITD, the right-of-way supervisors and agents, respectively, you're hearing that there's different numbers.
Yeah, so what I was told, I checked back with him, and I called Tim Long on, let's see, February 11th, so a few days ago, and just talked with him and said, hey, you know, we discussed businesses at the hearing, and now I'd like to hear about the residents and what you think on that. What's your perspective looking at the maps? Because you can look and just see if the line goes through. And so I wanted to hear from him what it was. And I've been hearing a lot of misinformation. It seems like everywhere I looked, it was different information. And so what he said from looking at the maps is that for the western and actually the central route, there's one house that would be displaced. And so it's the same house, actually, if either of those alternatives were chosen. Yeah, for the western and central routes, it would be one house. And so even here it says it would be three on this chart that you were just quoting for the western route. And for the eastern alternative, it says five. But what they're thinking of doing now, he said, and I don't know how many mobile homes are in the park, the mobile home park there on Ide Road, is that they would actually buy out and displace all of the whole entire mobile home park, because the well there is going to be displaced, and there's another well that's questionable that had been drilled but blew out, and so it's not really functioning right now. So they've decided the simplest thing, or for them it seems like the most practical thing, is to buy out everybody there. And I don't know how many, he hasn't told me how many mobile homes, how many families or residents would be displaced.
And that would only happen if the eastern route is built.
That would only happen if the eastern route is built, and there'd also be a home north of the mobile home park that would, on Ide Road, that would also be displaced.
Now, how many residences is Tim Long telling you would be displaced by the central route?
He said one.
One residence, but here we have on the draft EIS, it says seven. And I also note that I was at part of the public testimony part of the hearing on January 23rd, and it seemed like multiple people got up and said their homes would be displaced by the central route, and now I'm wondering, okay, are they all in the same household or what?
Well, there's going to be some confusion because, you know, people, I don't know if people are saying displaced actually means encroachment, because you could be encroached upon, in which case either the right-of-way is already purchased or it would have to be purchased, but, you know, the highway could come closer to your home, which wouldn't be very pleasant. So they might be saying they're going to be displaced because it's coming closer.
Or they might be misinformed.
Or they might be misinformed, yeah. They might be looking at the map and think, well, I'm right on there, so I'm going to be displaced. Maybe they haven't talked to Tim Long or Carmen Reese. So they could be misinformed. They could also just be fearful that that's going to happen and, you know, not want the highway closer to their home. So I kind of feel like, personally, I feel like somebody who doesn't live on that highway, that if people already live on the highway, you've got to expect that it could be widened someday, whereas people that don't live on the highway and then you punch a new highway through, it just, to me personally, seems a little unfair, you know, that you could suddenly have a highway next to your house when you purchased a house, say, 20 or 30 years ago and property and developed it, you know, however you have taken care of it or developed it, and then all of a sudden the highway's next to you. But that's just my personal bias. It's kind of getting off the topic.
And I know, Lottie, as a former resident of Paradise Ridge and somebody who appreciates nature and so forth, I want to ask how you feel about the idea that this draft environmental impact statement clearly saying pretty close to the beginning that there would be seven residences displaced by the central route and five by the eastern route and eight businesses displaced by the central route and zero by the eastern route, coming out December 28th, and now here we are a little more than a week away from the deadline for public comments on the draft EIS, and the word is just getting out that these numbers, these important numbers, are in error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually passed on some of this information to the Paradise Ridge Defense Coalition, but it's hard to get this information out, I guess, and know how to get it out, you know. And a lot of people are basing their decision off what the EIS says, the draft EIS, and not everybody has the time or the interest to dig deeper. So it is kind of frustrating. I just wrote a letter to the editor. Some friends thought I should regarding this, so maybe more people will know at least this. And one thing it does for me is it makes me really suspect just of a lot of the information, you know, that we're given in this draft environmental statement and at the public hearing. I think the people at ITD are well-meaning, and they were very helpful and answered all my questions. But it's a lot to coordinate. It's the first environmental impact statement they've done in a very long time. That's what their manager said. Is it Ken Helms? He mentioned that they just haven't done one. So I think there's a little bit of disorganization happening. And I think there's also just a mindset of we want to go on this eastern route. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to kind of make the numbers look good. And, you know, we can call this displacement when it might be just encroachment on a lot of these different homes or businesses where you're just, you know, you're moving in and encroaching upon them. And some of those businesses and homes might get a little compensation, say if, you know, they need some money to extend their parking lot out a different way or whatever the case might be. And so I think just the language has been skewed. But when the public hears displacement, I mean, I know this is how I felt. I was like, wow, you know, I really would prefer to have the central route because I do care about Paradise Ridge and the ecosystem up there, and just I'd rather have less damage by sticking as close to the current route as possible so long as we're safe. But I went to that meeting thinking, if there's really 8 businesses displaced, I don't think that's really fair, you know, that I can't necessarily say we need to protect the ridge if there's going to be 8 businesses literally displaced. So I really took this to heart, and I was shocked when I found out they weren't going to be displaced. And the same thing with a weather study, you know, I was shocked that it was done so poorly and that it wasn't really taken in as even part of the safety study at all, how the weather conditions up higher in the ridge might affect safety for the people that are driving on the road up there. So anyways, I went there thinking, well, maybe if the highway truly isn't as safe on the central route, we should choose the eastern route because we don't want a bunch of people to be dying, but I'm skeptical that the safety is actually that different on those two routes for multiple reasons. But
that's former Paradise Ridge resident Lottie Forbes speaking to KRFP this afternoon. Idaho Transportation Department District Right-of-Way Supervisor Tim Long indicated he might be able to speak with KRFP about the issue on Tuesday. The draft EIS is found on the web at www.us95thorncreek.com, and the deadline for written public comments on the draft EIS is Saturday, February 23rd. We'll now fill the rest of this half-hour newscast with some more of the recorded testimony at the Idaho Transportation Department public hearing on the draft environmental impact statement for widening and rerouting U.S. Highway 95 south of Moscow, held January 23rd.
I'm Mary Ulrich, that's U-L-L-R-I-C-H. My husband and I have had the good fortune to live in the beautiful Palouse for almost 4 decades now, and we highly value its unique environment. As Tim just said, some of the largest remnants of the original Palouse Prairie, as well as forests and diverse wildlife, occur here. Paradise Ridge deserves reverence. Paradise Ridge, along with the other Palouse Buttes, is a unique ancient mountaintop remnant of the original western edge of the Rocky Mountains and the North American continent. My question today is why ITD would insist on invading and negatively upsetting this ecosystem when they have designed 2 other safe, acceptable alignments, meeting state and federal highway standards. I would like to point out that in the DEIS report, it states the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Army Corps of Engineers all indicated that their preferred alternative is the central route, C3. Interesting that this information appears in the executive summary in the DEIS in the section Level 1.4, Alternatives Screening. Bullet number 1. Public involvement and agency coordination, page 8. Why didn't ITD follow the preference of so many advising agencies? Why did they even consult them? The DEIS report also reveals that Idaho Fish and Game has stood up against the Eastern Alignment from the beginning. However, ITD has continued to pursue support for the Eastern Alignment, spending more money, more time to try to justify their preference. Both Dr. Wayne Milquist, wildlife study done in 2005, and Dr. Bill Rüdiger, wildlife study done in 2007, concluded, quote, "The Eastern E2 alternative posed the largest concern for big game among the three alternatives being considered." Not satisfied, ITD then went to the outside to garner support. December 2010, they hired Hall Sawyer of Western Ecosystems Technology Incorporated from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and involved Holland and Hart LLP of Salt Lake City, Utah. In Hall Sawyer's report, he states, quote, "The Eastern E2 alternative posed the largest concern for big game among the three alternatives being considered." In the executive summary of the DEIS under Topics of Concern and Controversy, it states, quote, "There has been disagreement between Idaho Fish and Game and ITD regarding appropriate mitigation." And this is then explained over quite a few pages over 2006-2007. In the safety analysis of the DEIS, in the section titled Wild Animal Crashes, it states, quote, "Alternative 2E, E2 has potential to have more wild animal crashes than C3 and W4 because of the 1.98 mile long length of alternative E2 within ungulate impact area. However, a wildlife crash countermeasure that clears the roadside of trees and brush will be constructed." In other words, mitigation destroys additional wildlife habitat on top of that destroyed by the four-lane highway. Finally, my question goes back to why. Why this trail of insistence on pursuing the most environmentally disruptive alignment when other alignments can satisfy? What is ITD's hidden agenda here? It is proposed that we request our local state legislative representatives look into this matter.
That was some of the public testimony at the Idaho Transportation Department public hearing on the draft environmental impact statement for widening and rerouting U.S. Highway 95 south of Moscow, held January 23rd. The draft EIS is found on the web at www.us95thorncreek.com, all one word, and the deadline for written public comments on the draft EIS is Saturday, February 23rd. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can also go to the Radio Free Moscow website at radiofreemoscow.com or krfp.org, or you can send your memberships by mail to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Jim Roach and Patrick McLaughlin assisted with tonight's newscast. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great weekend.